Nothing makes you grow up faster than the murder of a loved one. St. John's, Newfoundland, New Year's Eve, 1991. A time for celebration. An opportunity to start anew. But this New Year, someone will shock the city with an act of betrayal and brutality destined to change the lives of people here forever. In true crime, investigation and conviction may take years. But every detective knows that the crucial clue is always there, somewhere, in the first 72 hours. St. John's police receive a frantic 911 call.
I just peeked in the bathroom. There's blood everywhere. I don't know what happened.
By the time investigators arrive, a middle-aged woman has already been declared dead. Her name is Catherine Carroll. The 911 caller is the dead woman's son, Greg Parsons.
I spoke to her on New Year's. I called the house a little after 12, like I said, I told her I loved her and wished her a happy New Year.
The 19-year-old tells police he called again on New Year's Day, but got no answer.
I was in touch with her pretty much every day, so I knew there was something wrong.
When Parsons went round to his mother's house, he found it was dark.
It was like I didn't want to look in. I knew I had to, and when I looked in, I remember seeing blood, and I remember screaming out her name.
Police tell Parsons to go home and rest so they can begin their investigation. Under Catherine Carroll's fingernails, police find traces of what could be human tissue. Apparently, she tried to fight off her attacker. In the washing machine, police find a bath towel stained with what could be blood. All the samples are sent to the lab for testing. In the kitchen, police get a clue about the murder weapon. A knife is missing. In the basement, there's a broken window. More than likely, the killer's way in. Police call Parsons down to the station. They want more information about his mother.
She had some trouble with alcohol and prescription drugs, but she was back in school trying to upgrade her education and get back to work, so she was a real go-getter, a fighter.
The police ask if Parsons and his mother got along.
We had been having some trouble, and we kind of made up during Christmas. We made up, and I knew she was lonely.
When police ask for his whereabouts on the night of the murder, Greg is surprised.
I instantly knew that there was something majorly wrong with the questioning, and they asked where I was that night. I didn't even know about alibis.
He says he was at his girlfriend's house. Her father gave him a ride home.
I'd let my dog out, went to bed for the night.
No one can confirm Greg Parsons' whereabouts between 3 a.m. and 10 a.m. Autopsy results suggest that the murder may well have been committed between the hours of 3 and 10. Cause of death is 53 slash wounds, suggesting a crime of passion. Detectives believe Catherine Carroll must have known her attacker. The police want to keep an eye on young Parsons. They attend his mother's wake. Catherine Carroll's murder has shocked and saddened many in her community. Greg's closest friends gather in a house they all know well.
Everyone met at my house. Everyone loved to be there. They knew they could come and go as they pleased, and they knew where Mom would be on the couch. She was lonely, and she loved to have us around, and it was just some company for her.
Parsons says he loved his mother, but police start hearing a different story. One neighbor says she often visited Catherine Carroll. The two women spent hours together sharing secrets. At one point, Catherine said her son had threatened to kill her. In the next few days, 40 more people tell police the same chilling story. Then Brian, one of Greg's friends, suggests investigators listen to the lyrics of one of Greg's rock songs.
The bitch walked in, I took her with the rope. Killed her, another.
Police believe the lyrics reveal Parsons' real feelings about his mother.
They came to my house with the search warrant, and they were looking for clothing and a possible weapon.
Unable to find the missing knife, police discover blood on Parsons' shoe. Blood typing analysis shows that the blood on Parsons' shoe matches that of his mother, a blood type shared by 1 in 5 people. Because DNA testing is not yet available, the bloody towel and human tissue test results are inconclusive. Convinced Parsons killed his mother, police ask him to take a polygraph.
I figured all I had to do was put on this machine. This machine is going to say I'm telling the truth. But the polygraph investigator riled me up, asked me questions to intimidate me.
Parsons' responses lead investigators to conclude he's lying. Just 8 days after finding his mother dead, Greg Parsons is arrested for her murder. There hasn't been a murder in St. John's in 2 years. Parsons' trial creates a sensation. The jury hears the Kill Your Parents song 9 times in all. It paints Parsons as a disturbed and violent teenager whom his mother feared. On the charge of murder in the second degree, the jury finds Greg Parsons guilty.
Guilty. It was like someone took a gun and shot me in the head. I couldn't believe it.
Convicted of his mother's murder, Greg Parsons is now facing 15 years in prison without parole.
I remember the sentencing hearing, looking at the media saying that I'm innocent. It was almost a plea for somebody to please help me.
Jerome Kennedy, an advocate for the wrongfully convicted, is prepared to try. Having followed Parsons' case closely, Kennedy believes the police investigation alone provides grounds for an appeal.
These police officers were going to solve this crime. They were going to protect the citizens of St. John's. Yet they didn't have the credentials in either training or experience to act that way.
Kennedy argues that the Kill Your Parents song has been taken far too seriously.
This tape was so foolish. The tape was a bunch of kids in a basement putting together a stupid song.
The Kill Your Parents song was played for Mom, and she was a character, and she found it very funny.
Kennedy thinks police made another mistake when they decided to take Catherine Carroll's accusations against her son at face value.
Mrs. Carroll cried out for attention. A picture emerges of a very lonely woman, a tormented woman, who, in an attempt to gain sympathy and attention from people, will say almost anything. My son's a bastard. He's going to kill me. None of which is based in fact and none of which is true.
Kennedy feels the police took one look at Greg Parsons and got tunnel vision.
They excluded any other theory other than Greg Parsons being the killer. Just imagine the horror of going into that room, opening that door, looking in, and just see your mother slashed to pieces on the floor, blood everywhere. And within 6 hours, you're not even the suspect, you're the perpetrator.
Parsons tells Kennedy the police wanted a confession right away. The more he maintained his innocence, the worse they treated him.
They brought me to the police station. They stripped me to my underwear. I said all night long, I said, gentlemen, I'm exercising my right to remain silent. And the more I said that, the more pissed off they'd get. It was just hours of mental torture and mind games. Finally, I said, bring me to the lockup. Bring me where you're bringing me.
He's falling in the snow. They're taunting him. There was no respect for Greg Parsons' constitutional rights and no respect for Greg Parsons as a human being, because in their minds, this man had brutally killed his mother.
Next to finding my mother, it was the second worst night of my life.
Kennedy convinces a provincial court judge to grant Greg Parsons an appeal, and in an unprecedented decision, bail. When Parsons is released, pending a new trial, not everyone is pleased.
I was out on the streets with a big M on my shirt. I was a murderer. I was a monster. No one would look at me. It was horrific.
Parsons wants a normal life. He marries his longtime girlfriend. But living under house arrest and constant surveillance is anything but normal. For the next 3 years, he waits for his day in court. St. John's police remain convinced he's guilty. By this time, advances in DNA technology mean that test results can now be conclusive. Eager to prove Parsons' guilt, police demand that all crime scene evidence be re-examined. The results leave the police stunned. The blood on Parsons' shoe is not his mother's blood. Crime scene evidence contains a mixed sample from the victim and an unknown man who cannot be Greg Parsons. 7 years after his mother's murder, Parsons is cleared of all charges.
Thank God for DNA, that's all I can say. Is my favorite three letters of the alphabet, I'll tell you that. I figured it was over, life is gonna get better. I was trying to support myself, support my family, but no one would hire me. People didn't come up to me. People were afraid of me. Struggling. We lived on $800 social assistance a month. It was a terrible life.
Desperate to know who killed his mother, Parsons finds he must now count on the same police force that wrongly accused him. Detective Bob Johnson is chosen to head up the new investigation.
I wasn't an advocate for Greg Parsons. I wasn't an advocate for anybody. But I was an advocate for the truth. My concern was, what really happened on January 1st, 1991? We re-interviewed everybody, obtained statements from everybody. We looked at those people to see if they had strong alibis, and if they didn't, we asked them for DNA samples. We tested over 150 people for DNA. We also interviewed in excess of 2,500 people.
2 years into his investigation, Johnson still has no idea who killed Catherine Carroll. For the first time in the case, police decide to appeal to the public.
And we're asking anybody with any information, regardless how insignificant it may be, to come forward.
When one of Parsons' old friends responds, what he has to say breaks the case wide open. After going public with his investigation, Detective Johnson receives a tip from one of Greg Parsons' old friends. He tells Johnson that after Catherine Carroll's murder, he and his friends often got together to talk about who might have killed her. He describes how one particular evening, a buddy of theirs named Brian Doyle told him Parsons had actually confessed.
This guy is saying that Greg killed his mother, and he's laughing about it. You know, it wasn't a strong lead, but it was something.
When investigators go looking for Brian Doyle, they discover he left St. John's after Parsons' conviction and hasn't been seen since. Greg Parsons is unaware that police are investigating one of his oldest friends. Struggling to make a new life for himself and his young family, Parsons finds that he's still a marked man.
And I remember my oldest son coming home from kindergarten one day and said to me so nonchalantly, Dad, I know why you were in jail. You killed your mom. That's a devastating day to have to sit down and try to explain that situation to him.
Detective Johnson traces Brian Doyle to a factory in Ontario. In the hope Doyle will leave a DNA sample behind, he's put under surveillance. DNA from the saliva on Doyle's cigarette is compared to DNA evidence collected during the first 72 hours of the investigation. The results match. 9 years after Catherine Carroll's murder, investigators are certain they found her killer. But there's a catch. Because Brian Doyle's DNA and the victim's are mixed on both evidence samples, Detective Johnson fears his case won't hold up in court. To get Doyle to confess, Johnson sets up a sting. An undercover officer, codenamed Adams, starts selling contraband at Doyle's factory.
So they create a relationship where he is buying a lot of cigarettes and booze, alcohol, and various other things from Adams. Doyle became very comfortable around Adams to a point that Adams is able to get Doyle to participate in what he thinks is criminal activity.
It takes 3 months to gain Doyle's trust. Once Adams has it, he tells Doyle there's someone his boss needs to get rid of, permanently. Would Doyle be willing to help? When Doyle agrees, Adams says he'll have to meet the boss first.
Doyle wants to be part of this group. He sees Adams doing really well. He wants to be part of this. And so he wants to impress Adams' boss.
Adams makes the introduction at a local motel. He neglects to tell Doyle the meeting is being recorded. The boss wants to know if Doyle has ever killed anyone. Doyle won't say. The boss pushes. If Doyle wants in, he'd better talk. For the first time ever, Brian Doyle reveals what happened on New Year's Eve, 1991. He was at a party. He was drunk. He was stoned. For reasons he can't explain, he left the party and headed for Catherine Carroll's house.
Her name's Catherine.
Forced open the basement window. He picked up a knife from the kitchen area. He went upstairs. He took off all his clothes. When he walked in her room, I don't think he really had it figured out what he was going to do, what his intentions were. Mrs. Carroll wakes up, and she realizes it's Brian Doyle. No! I said, I'd cut her. I said, she wouldn't die. I cut her again, she wouldn't die. So I cut her again, she wouldn't die.
Flash, she didn't die.
He remembers looking in the mirror and said, I'm just looking in the mirror and there's blood everywhere. He gets a shower. He puts on his clothes, wash the towel.
Doyle cut his hand during the attack and left traces of his DNA on the towel.
The undercover operator said, does it bother you? you know what you did? And he goes like this. He said, the only thing that bothers me is that you know. It was amazing. In 10.5 years, he had not told anybody. The undercover operator had done extensive work with organized crime. He said, it's like I sat in a room with evil for 15 minutes. We now know the truth. We know exactly what happened to Mrs. Carroll.
I was floored. I couldn't believe it. I met Brian Doyle when I was 9 years old. He was a buddy of mine. I kind of took him under my wing. Growing up, on many occasions, I had to protect him from people, neighborhood bullies.
This is a guy who watched his friend go to jail for a crime he didn't commit. This is a guy who was interviewed by the police and pointed them in Greg's direction.
It was the ultimate betrayal. And words can't describe it.
Now a St. John's fireman, Greg Parsons has received a formal apology and financial compensation from the Newfoundland government for his wrongful conviction.
I've watched Greg Parsons grow up. I've watched him deal with situations that would break most human beings. But I've also seen the indomitable spirit that he possesses.
It's hard to grieve in a normal sense of the way, but I'm at peace with Mom and with what happened.
For the murder of Catherine Carroll, Brian Doyle is currently serving a life sentence with no possibility of parole for 18 years. The stories on 72 Hours are true. The detectives and forensic scientists are the ones who actually worked on the case.